Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It turned out to be the equivalent of a state funeral. Mm. And as much as we were hurting, everybody else was hurting too, you know. For I think it was a long time after when we looked back and realised exactly how huge a contribution had been made.
Anniversaries are a bit of a theme for us this month on the podcast, and today, the 10th of October, marks 10 years since the death of the brilliant and beautiful Stephen Gately. In one of our very first episodes of Grief Encounters, we had the pleasure of speaking to one of his best friends and bandmates, Mikey Graham, about his love for Stephen.
The love of a friend is a special thing, and equally so, the loss of a friend is an extremely difficult situation. Before we discuss the loss, can you give our listeners a proper insight into what Stephen was like as a person and a bandmate and as your friend?
Yeah, well, Stephen was a great guy. He was very, very vibrant, very colourful, very excited about life in general. He was born just around the corner here in Savile Place, and he was really, really enjoying the freedom that he had as a gay man and having come out. He was free, and he was at the happiest that he had, I think, ever been at the stage when he passed away. But he was a great guy and sorely missed, and a huge impact on the band, obviously, as well. You know, it was difficult to deal with, but we had each other to constantly speak with about it. Even nowadays, his memory and the memory of his antics in dressing rooms, he was a real character, and he'd always have you laughing, you know, all the time. Like, you know, he just had a great sense of humour, very, very witty guy, you know.
Do you guys ever do anything to remember him when you're together now?
Constantly, yeah. When we're on stage, we always have a section of the show that's dedicated to Stephen and recordings of his voice on certain parts of the songs that would be played, you know. So it's like when it first happened, when we were doing a tribute in the shows, it was emotional for us and the audience. But now, with a new tour coming up, we're looking at it in a more positive light, at the celebration of his life and who he was, rather than you know, to make that part of the show too gloomy kind of thing. We've already done that and addressed that end of it.
Stephen passed away. There was sort of a reaction in the country of pure shock, of people were devastated. We saw how, as you said, just around the corner, the streets were all cleaned up, gates were painted, everybody, there was flowers planted. I mean, it was huge. It was a national occasion of sadness, of grief. It was just incredible scenes that perhaps you mightn't have expected. Did that help you in the initial days, that you weren't on your own, that other people felt what you were going through?
It was absolutely overwhelming, the amount of support that we got from the country and from Stephen's local community and also the An Garda Síochána as well. Just everybody. I mean, it turned out to be the equivalent of a state funeral. Mm. And, you know, as much as we were hurting, everybody else was hurting too. You know, that this young guy who, you know, came from a tough part of the city and also being gay, you know, he had risen through all of that, you know. So there was a huge loss everywhere. But yes, in answer to your question, the support from everybody was absolutely phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. We did not expect that at all. Nobody was more surprised than we were, you know.
Did you take a few moments, maybe as the days went on or the weeks went on, and sort of look back to try and take that in, to try and remember how people were feeling? And
I don't think it was more so days or weeks after. I think it was a long time after when we looked back and realised exactly how huge a contribution had been made by, like I say, his local community, the community at large, the country. You know, everybody just seemed to pull together and look after us and you know, show a great respect to this kid from Dublin, you know.
Do you think about what you'd be talking to him about now, or what he'd be like now, what he'd be doing? Would he still be performing with you?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely, for sure. I mean, Stephen was a born performer, and, you know, music and the entertainment industry was his life completely. So, yeah, there's no doubt whatsoever that he would have been still involved in all of that. But because he was so happy at the time that he passed away, I would like to think that happiness would have carried on, and he would have really blossomed even more into himself and his own skin, you know.
We talk a lot about those initial stages, the first few days and weeks of grief, but I think there's often a really hard stage inevitably everybody gets to. I mean, for you, when you went through this, what was the kind of the part that it got really, really difficult to accept that this was the new reality and that your friend was gone and you were living in a new world?
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right in saying that. It's you're shifted into a new paradigm and you're trying to hold on to the old one. And as long as you're holding on to the old one and you're in resistance of that, you will continue to suffer. And the reason why we continue to hold on to the old paradigm is out of fear of the new one. Mm. So it's not really until you get to a stage of surrender and acceptance to what is that you then begin to heal and to move forward and look back on very fond memories of the time that we have had together. And also, I mean, as I said before, you know, in my opinion, it's better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all, you know.
But don't they say that grief is the price you pay for love, and then strength is the reward you get for grief?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I lost my mother there recently as well, last year on the 23rd of December. So coming up to her first anniversary. And it's love is the highest possible energy or reward that you can receive in life. Whether that's, you know, the love of a lover, the love of a mother, the love of a friend, whatever form it comes in. And I'm sure you'll remember as well, like when you meet, for example, somebody that you fall in love with for the first time, you know, that kind of ecstatic feeling that you have, and it raises everything in you, your spirit, everything is raised, you know, your whole kind of vibration, if you like. So grief is the price that you pay when you lose such a reward, that high love. But again, as I said earlier on, the grief only goes on as long as you are in resistance to what happened, to what you've lost. And it takes time. Now, it's not like, I'm not trying to say
that. Are you sort of saying then you should put a time frame on grief?
No. Not a time frame on it, but a new perspective on it. That grief is the healing process, and grief must be allowed to happen. And most people will continue to grieve. I mean, I have seen some people grieve for the rest of their lives and really just not move on. They're frozen in time because they've never let go of the loss of the person. Now, that's not to say that you have to let go of the person and the memories, but if you can purely focus on the grieving aspect of it and go through that, because at the end of the day, like I say, with love being the highest energy you can receive in life, there has to be a process whereby that has to be expressed through crying, through all the aspects of grief. However, when equipped with the knowledge of how grief works, and if you then allow yourself to become the observer of your grief and your grieving process, and allow yourself to be that, to do that, there eventually comes a time whereby, tooled with these kind of perspectives, you begin to understand that if I want to carry on in life, it's a matter of complete and utter surrender wholeheartedly to what has happened. And when you do that, then that cloud lifts and you begin to look forward instead of being frozen in time.
So it's like a full acceptance.
It's a complete and utter surrender to, because we can't control this life. You know, I mean, we try our best to. We try to grip onto it with both hands, and especially when something like love comes along. You know, we don't want to lose love. It makes us feel so good, you know, as well as the many other things that person contributed to your life. And they were also a huge pillar of your identity in this world, you know, which is another thing, if we have time, I'll go into. But you've lost a huge part of your identity. And this is where we suffer. And this is, as the Buddha said, that the root of all suffering is fear. So it's the fear that has to be addressed. And the fear can only be addressed when we begin to peel back these layers and layers of identity that we've built up over the years since childhood. I mean, I'll quickly go through this, that basically when we're born into this world, our first identification, though we're not aware of it, I don't think so anyway, when we're just born, but is our gender. Then the next thing, as we begin to grow older and we come out of, it's called theta, easy for me to say, but the child's brain works on a particular wavelength, and as we get older, it moves up in different states of awareness.
Yeah.
So your first thing is your gender, then your second thing becomes, let's say, your name, and then your family and your mother, your father, your home, your siblings, your home life, your community, your friends. This is year by year. You know, you go through primary school, secondary school, college, and then you have a title of some kind in your job. And so when somebody says to you, you know, who are you? You can riddle off a whole load of things saying, I am male or female. I am, you know, John or Julie. I am the son of such and such and what have you. I am a dentist. I am whatever it might be. And every year that goes by in our lives, we build up these layers of identity. And one of these layers of identity is that I am, let's say, the partner of somebody, let's say, or the wife of somebody or whatever. So that's a layer of identity. And we strongly cling to all of these labels, if you like, that define us in this world, and we protect and guard them so much. And when we lose one of those layers of identity, such as a lost loved one, you're at a huge loss. Like, there's a layer of you missing. So you're trying your best to live life with this missing
link
and identity that you've been so tightly attached to for many years. So it's not until you, like an onion almost, you peel back these different layers and layers and layers and layers of identity, And just like an onion, when you come to the center of it, they get thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. And then when you strip every layer away, you find that there's actually nothing there. There's nothing
but
there.
But is it a case then, if you add on all these layers as you move through life, mm-hmm. then you're starting to move back then? Because all those layers are coming away.
Well, no, you don't move back. You're always moving forward, but you're moving forward in a more knowledgeable way mm-hmm. than general society teaches. Mm. Because when somebody goes through the process of really addressing their identifications in this world and you know, the pillars of their identity, they then begin to see life on a different perspective and dimension altogether. And one which you then realize when you've gone through that process, that no matter what happens in this world, there will always be good, there will always be bad. Mm. And although I'm kind of saying this matter-of-factly, I know for sure it's not this simple. It's taken me years and years and years and years to come to my way of thinking about this. But when you do go through this process and you go the journey into yourself, you find that there is nothing to fear.
Yeah.
And when fear just, when you get to the center of that onion, so to speak, and you see there's nothing there, the fear dissolves as well. And when the fear dissolves, you then find yourself in a position whereby you wholeheartedly are surrendered and acceptant of all that has been and all that will be in your life. In this small window of time that we have from birth till death, there's a multitude of things that can happen. But if you accept it wholeheartedly without clinging onto it, because it's not ours at the end of the day to own. You know what I mean? It's only a loan, both this body and the people that we love. So you begin to kind of understand that, okay, I've loved and I've lost, but that isn't the end of the story. Mm. And if I allow myself to be open to whatever might be, and it takes a bit of time and practice, believe me, but once it does happen, the result does happen, you then can approach grief in a very different manner than you may have before.
I went to a therapist shortly after my mother passed away, and she said something, and at the time it really stung, but I actually fully understand it now. And she said, there's a richness in this experience.
Totally. Mm.
And I was so angry at her for saying that, as if somehow I was supposed to even be better than I normally am through my grief experience. But now I actually understand that in a way, it kind of put me at a completely different level because I could see things in a different way. The one thing I wanted to ask you about in all of this, I think self-criticism comes into grief a lot.
Yes.
I shouldn't be at this stage yet. I should be doing this. I shouldn't think that much about the person. I shouldn't talk that much about the person. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do that. And when you're trying to kind of get to the next stage, that can be really damaging. I think you think the world is telling you to move on a lot. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, you should be past it at the 6 month anniversary or the year anniversary. I mean, how do you think self-criticism comes into the process? Because that's, for a lot of people who aren't where maybe you are at with this, that's something that can be quite overpowering for them.
Absolutely. There is a sense of guilt with moving on. And that sense of guilt comes through years of programming in the societies that we live in. That, you know, let's say a person was able to be over a loss in 6 months' time, people would be judgmental of it, going, you know, how come they're not, you know, broken and all that kind of thing, you know. And then maybe longer than 6 months or whatever. But first of all, from the point of view of that self-guilt or self-criticism about how you're coping, and if you're coping well, you feel guilty. First of all, the person that you loved and lost, if they were able to say to you, you know, don't worry about me. Mm. I'm okay now wherever I am. I'm okay now. You do what you have to do because you've still got time here on this planet. Life is such a wonderful thing that I know we had a great time together and hopefully maybe see each other again one day. I don't know. But you know, in the time that you have left, try to make it rich, even more rich and experience the rest of the time that you have left. And you know, you're more educated about it than you would have previously. So, you know, my advice to anybody who would be self-criticizing with regard to if they're feeling good after a certain amount of time is to accept that too. Surrender to that too. Allow it to be. You know, it is what it is. It's out of your control. But if it's making you feel better, go with it. The person that you've lost will not be holding anything against you. They would wish nothing more than you to be able to move on sooner. Do you think they'd like to see you the rest of your life frozen in time?
No.
No, they wouldn't. You know,
you talked
what I mean?
About pillars as well, and a mother.
Yeah.
In terms of the pillars, that's getting to the very beginning of the onion.
Absolutely.
That's like a very much of the core of your identity.
Totally.
How have you found that? I mean, it's a very difficult thing to talk about because a mother can, for it's different for everyone, I suppose, but a lot of times it is the heart of it's where you began.
It is.
How is that? Did you find that that was an incredibly, even though you have all these kind of learnings and coping skills, that was difficult to?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm still human. And being human, I have to deal with all the human emotions that go with losing a pillar of my identity. And my mother, you know, she, as all of our mothers, you know, she was the greatest in the world. You know, she lived for her children. She did everything for her children, you know. I feared losing my mother and my father all my life. I feared that moment. And it's a little ironic in my particular situation that it was in last May where I kind of had this moment of, dare I say, enlightenment, but it's known as Satori in Sanskrit. And it's a moment of completely allowing the will of the universe just to be. And don't get me wrong, I cried. That has to happen. That's a natural process. You must go through that. You can't deny any of that. But the reality was that I was shifted into a new dimension. And I have to deal with that new dimension. And it's very difficult to adjust to that new dimension. When I go into her house and, you know, her shoes are still under the table, her picture on the wall, you know, some of her little things. She was quite a religious woman. So there's constant reminders of her around the place. But if I find myself feeling down about it, I don't try and snap myself out of it. What I do is observe myself and my emotions when I'm in that place and not fear those emotions and that place. Sit there quietly and observe it. And then all things pass, this too will pass. So you then find yourself in a different, perhaps, location or a different frame of mind. And I go, well, you know what? I had my mother for 45 years, a wonderful, wonderful woman who I loved dearly, and all of my siblings. I'm one of seven. And my dad, of course. And, you know, I had 45 years with a wonderful, wonderful woman. A lot of people don't have that. My best friend lost his mother at 13 years of age. I didn't realize until I lost my mother, I don't know how he coped. I don't know how he managed to cope, you know. Now, my mother was best friends with his mother too, and my mother took him under her wing as well and became a bit of a motherly figure to him. But like I say, it's just really the importance of allowing yourself to grieve whenever it comes upon you. But rather than grieving in a state of resistance to what has happened, grieve, but allow yourself to be the observer of your grief. Sit with it, you know. That's where the healing is taking place. And then you'll find yourself healed a little bit, and then you kind of surface. Your head comes back up above water again. And if you just allow nature to be and the human emotions to be the way they are supposed to, it's like if you are swimming against the tide, you'll drown. You'll exhaust yourself if you're in resistance. But if you just basically, you know, turn over on your back, so to speak, and allow the buoyancy of the water, it will carry you to peaceful shores. Mm. You've just got to allow that to be, you know. Mm. Resistance, whatever you resist will persist, you know.
I see. C.S. Lewis has a quote that I found so powerful, which was that he never knew grief felt so much like fear. Mm. And I remember someone sending that to me, and at first I kind of understood it, and I'd certainly understand it a lot more now, because it does oftentimes manifest itself in that way.
Yes.
If you're looking for a safe haven to express how you feel, share articles, photos, and memories of your loved ones, join the Grief Encounters Facebook group, a place for support, compassion, and empathy for those grieving.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I want to ask you about, and we talked briefly about this before, about signs and maybe being open to perhaps the person who's passed on is sending you an indication that they're there, or maybe they're not. And it's something that happens to a lot of people. I mean, I would have been the biggest cynic about anything like that.
Yeah.
But then as they happen, you're going, hold on a sec. Where did that come from? How did that happen? Etc. You spoke before about the butterflies.
Yeah.
And Stephen loved butterflies, and something special happens to you, or has happened to you as a group when you've been performing.
Well, yes, there was an example when we were doing some tech rehearsals for the tour just after we lost Stephen, and he had an interest, well, a love of butterflies, you know. And in this big place where we were doing tech rehearsals with the whole stage and what have you, a butterfly flew across the stage. And now this butterfly had no place being in there whatsoever. This was a dark building that, you know, it just shouldn't have been there. It wasn't its natural habitat. So when it flew across the stage, everybody looked at each other and kind of thought, wow, is that a bit of a sign or something, you know? Now, me personally, I don't know if that was or if that wasn't. Similar things have happened around my mother's passing as well in the last year. And if it brings comfort to people, so be it. Mm. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And there's who's to say if it isn't a message or some kind of thing.
Do you take heed of it? Does it make you stop in your tracks, or are you slightly cynical about it?
No, I wouldn't be cynical about anything like that, because I come at these things from both a philosophical and a scientific point of view. And Nikola Tesla said that if you want to understand the universe, you have to think in terms of resonance, vibration and frequency. So the whole universe is, on a scientific level, the whole universe is made of energy of different types. And that energy can neither be, it's the first rule of thermodynamics, that energy can neither be created or destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So, you know, although a living person has passed on, I have no, you know, no qualms in any manner about these being signs or signals potentially, because the energy from that person in all the scientific ways has moved on to another plane, you know, and scientifically I can understand, believe and know that it is absolutely possible that the consciousness of the person who has passed this, it has gone back into the ether or what have you, but through the living and combined thought processes, as you, I'm sure you've all heard the law of attraction and all that kind of thing. Well, it actually is a scientific fact, you know, and I won't go into it now, but I can dissect as to how it is a scientific fact, and what you believe you receive and all that, you know, like our thought processes are energy waves, and they attract like-minded thoughts. So therefore, if you are in a situation of grief or whatever it might be, having lost a person, and particularly if they're, you know, if you have siblings and other people and what have you, that constant subconscious longing is going on, and that is, it's invisible to us, but it scientifically it is there, it's happening, it's an energy, so that will attract something of the nature of a sign.
I mean, I'm not a religious person, but I think one of the things that's important is that the openness, so like to be kind to yourself. So yeah, if something brings you comfort, so I'm not a religious person, but sometimes I think about my mother, and the first thing that comes into my head, and I can't explain it, is her saying, "I'm right here."
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't fight it anymore. I let her, I don't dissect it. I don't try to figure out what made me think that thing. I just really believe
but
that
it's a comfort. It's a reassurance.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a reassurance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting that you said you now don't fight it anymore, you know, and it's in that surrender that peace comes to you, and also, you know, to those who've passed on. And I think it's a good thing whenever you're feeling like that to ask yourself again about the person who has moved on. If they were there with you now, what would they say to you? They'd say, "What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing wasting this much time? I'm okay where I am," you know, wherever that might be. They would shake you up and say, "Don't worry, you know, don't worry. Just enjoy this the rest of the time you have. You know, I'm fine." And they are fine.
My mother
grieve for our pain, not for theirs.
My mother said a couple of days before she died, she said, "I'm okay, I'm going to see my mom."
Yeah.
And it was like the most powerful thing, because I just thought,
you never think of it like that.
You never think of it like that. She was like, she was excited because she was such a religious person.
Yeah.
She was like, "Oh my God, I'm going to go see my mother." Like, she couldn't even wrap her head around it. She was so looking forward to that moment, which my sister and I both found a lot of peace in that idea.
And so you should find a huge amount of comfort in the fact that you have moved on to a different dimension again when you leave this body, you know? And it's one of complete peace, I presume. I hope there's no mortgages and things like that in the next life, you know what I mean? And no worries about bills or any of those kind of things that we have in this life, you know what I mean? We're so punished by the fear that is the world as it is today, you know, and all that you've supposedly to match up to, you know? No, just surrender.
On that note, Mike Graham, we will leave it there. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.